Welcome to Geeks of the North, a hobby and gaming podcast about Belle Province. This week, Antoine, Yom, and I are talking about growing as a painter and what you can do to improve your skill set. So why don't you sit back, relax, grab a paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Geeks of the North. As always, I'm your host, Paul Filion, here with my co-host, Antoine Bergeron.
Hello!
And Yom Le Machine.
Hi! Hi again.
Two in a row, Yom.
Yeah. It's crazy! Can't believe it.
Pretty soon you're going to have a chair with your name on it and everything.
Ooh! My private parking space and everything.
That's right, that's right. You can park your ass there anytime. So, this should be a... Well, the first section is going to be a bit shorter than usual, I think. And main topic, I think we'll probably be able to drag on for a bit, because it's going to be a lot of talking, and we all love to talk. Well, except for Antoine. But Yom loves to hear his own voice.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be talking about how to grow as a painter. You know, what resources there are to help develop your ability. So, I think it's going to be a pretty cool hobby-related topic. We haven't had one for a bit. But before we get there... We have to do the hobby time. So let's jump on in. And as always, I'll go first, because I'm me. So, hobby. I've had a fairly productive week. It's only been a week since last recording, so this section's going to be fairly short for everyone else, but I kind of packed things in. I've been working on my commission, the Blight Wasps, and I have to say those models are not growing on me at all. Well, the client based the models, like he glued them to their stands already, and they're transparent to acrylic, right? Mm-hmm. So, and he wants to keep them like that. So trying to paint these little miniatures that are really kind of stuck to the base without getting paint all over the acrylic stands, it's really kind of annoying. And so, like the wasps, their legs are so close to the stands, I can't even get tape up in between to properly mask.
Okay.
And even if I could, I wouldn't be able to paint the inside of the leg. So it's just really annoying. And I asked about maybe trying to break them off the stands, and he just pinned them with like crazy long pins. I guess there's a pin that goes up through the body of the thing, and there's enough crazy glue to kill, you know, the small horse. So I don't think there's any way I could, you know, debase them without breaking those acrylic stands. So I'm just fighting with them.
That's not nice. How many do you have to do?
12.
Oh, good.
3 units, yeah. So I'm trying to work my way through those. They're due for next weekend, and I have to paint an Epsilonia for him, but that should go easier. So I'll start her hopefully by Wednesday and get her done for Saturday, Sunday. Aside from that, I've been reading. I've been reading some of the new releases from Games Workshop for Age of Sigmar. They released a Grand Alliance Chaos book, which I picked up just because it was such a super deal. It's a 300-page softcover for $40 Canadian.
Okay.
That's
really cheap for
GW. Yeah, exactly. It's softcover, but it's high-quality paper. It's like satin finish, and it is 300 pages full color. So at $40 Canadian, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, for Game Workshop? Yes.
Yes.
Well, I think for anyone, really.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
I mean, but especially for them.
Yeah. But to counterbalance that, they also released a hardcover Age of Sigmar book called Balance of Power. It's the second book in the Realmgate Wars campaign setting, or campaign series. And that book was $90 Canadian. So for they sure. Balance out, you know. So
more in tune, yeah. What do you find in the Grand Alliance Chaos book? Like, is it, there's their rules for...
It's new wars. Well, it's war scrolls for everything.
Okay.
And it's, and for anything, it's chaos, right? So the Archeon book, or the Everchosen book, whatever it's called, warriors, demons, you know, all the goodies.
All the baddies, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. All the bad, but good, yeah. All in one place with some fluff and, you know, just painting guide and tutorials and, it makes me think of almost like a second edition 40K codex. You know, where you had like the painting guide in it and the fluff and then all the unit choices and stuff. So it's kind of formatted like that. And Balance of Power, I just kind of flipped through. It's a lot of fluff. It's got some formation type things, and it's got scenarios. I haven't looked at the scenarios yet. I actually posted a tweet because I was so kind of annoyed with Games Workshop. Just because the book quality is so good, but the game is still Age of Sigmar, right? So I'm like, what? Why do you spend so much developing all this cool stuff for a game that you basically just threw out there, you know, like that? Untested, unfinished, and whatever, you know. I find it strange.
Is it too early to have numbers for... Yeah, it's too early, right? To have numbers for Age of Sigmar release?
We won't have numbers. They don't share it by game.
Okay.
I mean, they did their last quarterly report, and it showed that miniature sales were down 15%.
Mm-hmm.
But IP sales are up, so they've got a lot more licensees for video games and stuff, so... I mean, and from when I talk to my Games Workshop rep, the kind of information I get from her is Age of Sigmar is doing okay in some places, not doing very well in others, and it depends a lot on the age group of the people that the store draws.
Okay.
So if it's a lot of older gamers, Age of Sigmar is not doing well with like our generation of gamers. Not to say there's no one our age who plays it and likes it, and if you do play it and like it, that's great, good for you.
You know. We accept everyone.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing wrong with liking the game.
No.
It's just not for me, and I still feel a bit butthurt over fantasy getting killed like that, and you know, me having 300 or 400 miniatures I'll never use for anything ever again. So, unless I start playing Kings of War or whatever. But if the stores draw a young crowd, Age of Sigmar is really kind of drawing in those people. And we were talking last show about Relic Blade and kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I finally started thinking that maybe Age of Sigmar, you know, if you want your kids to get into miniature wargaming, teach them Age of Sigmar, because you can't get much more basic than that.
I agree. The cost of the miniatures, the game needing the miniatures assembly being a pain. They're still Game Workshop models. A simple game like Relic Blade, you're gonna use bones or one piece pewter model, not 25 piece dwarves, and that you need not just five. You need a lot more than that.
Well, there's no size requirement for Age of Sigmar. I do agree the models are super complex. I just assume people would have models they would use, or you know, there's no reason you couldn't proxy stuff, right?
Yeah, but I don't see it as an intro game for somebody who have never played anything, for a child, maybe a teen, maybe, but for people like us who want to make the kids try a game, that's too much stuff.
Well, between young kids and young teens would be fine with the Age of Sigmar.
That's true. Age of Sigmar is a lot of reading. You could proxy the models. The models don't really matter to me that much, but there's a lot of content on each of those war scrolls and a lot of interactions. Yeah, I always tend to forget that. I was just thinking the core rules themselves are stupid simple, but then there's everything else from all the different units you pick that changes everything. Fair enough. I retract my statement.
So, points for Relic Blade. Again.
Wow. Sure.
No.
And points for Relics, too, just because, you know, we haven't mentioned Tor yet, so.
Yep.
There you go.
If you remove the second part from Relic Blade, well, we're talking about Relics now.
aside from the Age of Sigmar reading I've been doing, I've been planning my army for my annual game of Apocalypse with Yom. It's kind of like our birthday tradition for his birthday.
Yep.
Where we play a game of Apocalypse and Yom beats me.
It became my annual game of 40K, actually.
Yeah. So I played Space Marines last 2 years, and I decided that, you know what, it's time for a change. So I'm trying to decide between two different armies right now. Either Tau or Adeptus Mechanicus. So
interesting.
Yeah. Now Adeptus Mechanicus will probably have allies, and so will the Tau for that matter, but I could do a Tau Eldar Xenos army if you don't fight you. That'd be kind of interesting.
If you want, if you use the Tau, I have a Barracuda I can lend you.
Ooh.
To get you a flyer on the table.
Pretty cool, yeah. Scratch build Barracuda, that's true, that's true.
Oh, I remember that. You showed me that a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that thing was pretty awesome.
Yeah, for so, a piece of foam, yeah.
Yeah, it's well-shaped foam, though. Yeah,
but
so
if you change army, does it mean you have to paint all these?
Yeah, but whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Okay. If you say so, man, whatever floats. But yeah, it's cool that you take it so seriously. I really appreciate that, Paul.
His admech, he already has two knights painted.
Two knights, and I'm actually, it's going to be admech with a Titan Legion, I think. You know, my three Titans, my four knights. All kind of thematically joined, I think it'll be cool.
You won't have much point left in the way for regular troops, so you don't need to paint that much. Yeah, it's
well,
true.
Well, what's a Reaver Titan? 1,200 points or something? And the two Warhounds are 700 or 750 each? And we're playing like 8,000 points, so I'll still have like 4,500 points to paint.
Oh, yeah, the two Knights also.
Oh, yeah, the Knights are like three, yeah. So it's four Knights. So what is that? 4 times 4 is 1,600 plus 1,400, so it's 3,000, 4,000. Oh, I'll still have like 3,500 points to paint. That's okay. I'll figure it out. Lots of Castellan robots. Painted like Big Hero 6 is for jokes.
So many Titans. I'm going to run out of nubs, of a parked on nubs.
That's the goal.
Just the Reaver Titan, how many nubs is going to take that thing down?
Okay. That's not so bad. The way you play, you'll like shoot at it with a flyer that really shouldn't hurt it, but you'll take down its void shields and you'll one-shot it with your like eye laser off your Gargant. It'll scream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way it usually goes. Oh, sorry, yeah, the other thing is that the Adeptus Mechanicus, I've painted my Imperial Guard to go with them. Thinking that the guard are stationed on the planet, the PDF, the Planetary Defense Force for that Adeptus Mechanicus Monastery.
Cool.
Yeah, so I kind of got this whole theme thing going.
Mm-hmm. You've put much put some thought into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we always play kind of thematic, right? We're not playing to win, and we're not doing anything completely ridiculous. The game size is completely ridiculous, but
mm-hmm.
You know, we're not that power gamery. And it was funny. I don't know if you saw Logan from One Plus Armor posted a picture with at a 40K tournament this weekend with an Eldar army, and it was just a bunch of jet bikes with scatter lasers and things with D weapons, and he called it like the army of someone who doesn't want friends. And I think that was his army, and he was playing with Chris from Canhammer, and I think he also had an Eldar army with even more D weapons, and they were kind of joking about how, you know, their armies were completely what's the word I'm looking for?
Douche.
That would be a good word. Yeah, that kind of, you know, and I get it. It's a competitive environment. But I just commented that this is, you know, this is a perfect example of what's wrong with 40K now. And he replied, read page 4 or something like that. And I just replied, I reiterate, this is the problem with 40K right now. You know? It's gone very freeform, and the fact that you can just take anything anyway and build armies any way you like now.
No, I agree.
I think it's just kind of ruining the game for most people.
Oh, yeah. I think it's out of control, and their 40K is miles from the 40K I used to play. It's like another world.
It's unrecognizable anymore, right?
Yeah.
And again, you know, you have fun playing that, no problem. You want to go to a tournament, and you know... That's the thing. If you're going to a tournament, you know you're going to face armies like that. So if you play an army like that, that's cool. And I'm sure in a casual environment, they don't play that type of army. But I think that's the problem with the game. And I'm wondering what's going to happen, because I have a sneaky suspicion 40K is going to get the Age of Sigmar treatment at some point in the future. And I'm wondering what chaos is going to happen then.
But anyway. Latest rumor where that they would remove points but use battle groups or something like that.
Formations for everything.
Which doesn't change anything.
Because no, except
people are using only formations now. And yeah, sure, it just makes it worse without points.
Yeah, exactly. It just compounds the problem.
Well, it will do the same thing as Fantasy did. Age of Sigmar, people will do pools or points or stuff.
Yeah,
like
they'll
that
have too. To be comp systems and all that fun stuff. Yeah, Games Workshop will put it squarely in the hands of the players to figure out a way to play the game. Anyway, that is what it is. And last on my hobby, and moving right out of that, before I get more depressed. Last thing of my hobby, I have been planning my Reaver Titan paint job. I think it's going to have to be something cool. I think I'm going to paint, Yom's logo on the side of the Reaver Titan with a big bar through it. You know, it's like the anti-Yom Titan.
That sounds legit.
Yeah, it sounds totally legit.
Squashed orcs under its foot.
Oh boy.
A fistful of knobs or something on it.
Yeah, something like that. I can see it.
I don't remember what weapons I bought for it. I think it's got... I know it's got the missile pod on its back, and I think it's got the triple-barreled, what's it called? The laser. The
turbo lasers?
Yeah, the turbo laser, but it's like a... It's a bigger version of the turbo laser. Turbo laser is what's on the Warhound. And I think the other one's the volcano cannon is on the other arm, I think.
Those turbo lasers are really scary.
Well, I think the other weapon is the, if I'm not mistaken, it's the 18-inch template. So,
no.
You know, nothing like Melta in an 18-inch template, buddy. That's... Start weeping now. Anyway, yeah, so I've been planning the paint job on that, because that's going to be a fun model to paint. Not so much fun to assemble, because everything, as all Forge World kits, it's, you know, here's a bunch of pistons. Cut them to length. Depending on how you position the leg, you know, you have to cut everything, customize every piece. And I can't decide if I want to paint the inside of it or not, because the whole inside opens up, right? So you have, like, in the back of it, you've got these, like, three little alcoves. Two of them have like servitor type things in it, and there's some computer panels, whatever. And there's a Mechanicus guy that's kind of walking around in the room, maintaining stuff. And then the cockpit has two or three pilot people in it. And I'm debating if I actually want to paint the insides or just forget it and paint the outside.
No. Do you ever plan on opening it?
No, but it would bother me to know that it's not painted inside.
No. I think it's only a thing for collectors, really painting the inside. It's absolutely useless for gamers. I never painted insides of tanks. Never. It's useless.
I know, but I still feel bad.
Can you build a model without those pieces in?
No, not really. No. They're
part of the structure. You can.
Yeah, I mean the head. Them. If I make the head detachable, I could paint the head and the pilots afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
The back, like the main body, the interior would be tough to do, because I think, and I have to double check the schematics, but I think the alcoves are mounted to the thing that becomes the side wall of the main body.
Yeah, hard to do.
So, and because they're alcoves, there's like an overhang. So I can't really paint the under edge. Mind you, that wouldn't really be visible anyway. I'll have to see. I'll have to see what I can do.
Because you could use those bits or those parts for dioramas something else. Or something else. If that's, you can that's very build true. It without them. At least to that's have them be useful.
And maybe use the Mechanicus guy in the back as one of my Adeptus Mechanicus army commanders or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. The Magus or whatever he's called. Yeah. So yeah, so that's it for my hobby time. Games, I would have had some games because I was supposed to play some Guild Ball and Drop Zone Commander with Antoine. But because my baby was being a jerk last week and didn't let me sleep two nights in a row, I had to cancel. So that's it for me. My baby's a jerk. Antoine, what about you?
Well, contrarily to you, I have no hobby, but I have some games. So yeah, I've been doing overtime most of the week. So when I'm at home with free time, I'm connecting to the web job server and doing some more work. So no hobby for me. At least I took one night off and went to our local gaming stores, Gamers World. And you were not available, but Yom raised his hand and came to the store to play some games with me. So
yay. Came to your rescue.
Third wheel. Yay!
You know, Yom, being second after me isn't that bad.
True. Depends on the point of view, but yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I was able to get a game of Drop Zone Commander. There is a slow grow league that started that night. So I got one game, finally tried the game with my resistance against Chris, who was playing his...
PHR?
No, not the PHR, the
UCM?
UCM, the regular humans, yeah. UCM. So, beginner's luck, I barely crushed him.
You barely crushed him?
No, squarely not barely, crushed him.
Squarely crushed him, yeah, wrong word. Squarely crushed him.
Nice.
Both in points and in victory points and in control points. So,
what did you think of the mechanics of the game?
It's cool. It goes fast. There's two things that I found a bit cumbersome. The CQB. You have so many roles to do. And when you're shooting at building with people inside, you have to roll like four times to know if you kill some guys. Like you shoot to hit the building, you shoot to damage the building. For each damage you roll, you see if you hit a guy. And after that, you roll to damage them. And they might have a save after that. So you can go up to five rolls just to see if some guy in a building were hurt. So that was a bit cumbersome. But the rest of the game goes, it's fun. And I really like the flow. Like everything was moving fast. I dropped my tanks to be able to shoot the turn after and they moved 3 inches. So, oh yeah. They spent a bunch of their time shooting at buildings because they were not able to get a line of sight on anything.
But you know what? Shooting at buildings is surprisingly effective in that game.
Yeah.
I couldn't. So I have a big walker that has two giant chain guns, and I never take the thing. And then they increase the point cost on it. I'm like, why would you do that? And then I realized that the thing has really poopy range against shooting against vehicles and stuff because they have the active countermeasures. But shooting against buildings, I think the thing's range is infinite, and it mulches through buildings. It's got so many shots. It's basically designed to like tear apart fast-moving tanks and like buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, that's why. And then I started playing where I was shooting buildings, and I realized how good that is. Like, at one point, I was playing, I think I was playing Dan, and I kept making his infantry run. He couldn't get the objectives because he was trying to go through buildings with his guys, and I was destroying every building he was going into.
Oh, yeah. Well, at the size we were playing, it was 550 points, which is about starter size.
Yeah, exactly.
Was taking two or three turns to get a building down. But what we found out was that the resistance is really good against air. because at 550, I had just a straight bare starter army for resistance, and half of my units had anti-air weapons. So all Chris Air was down by turn three. Both of his transport, his big transport for his tanks. He had also a ship, an attack ship. Everything was killed really quick. However, his unit of heavier tanks on the table, that I'm not equipped to deal with.
Oh, his... I can't remember what they're called, but yeah.
And they were like regular tanks, but they have heavier armor, and the resistance doesn't have that much. Well, at least the starter doesn't have a lot of attack power versus high armor. They're really, really good against low armor, but high armor, that's more difficult. So that's something, when I build the army to get to higher points, I need to add stuff that can kill armor 9 up. So that's about it. It was fun. I'll try to get another game this week if I can. After that, Yom arrived at the store, and we played a starter game of Guild Ball. For the slow grow, it was still a starter versus starter. That went really fast.
Really fast.
How long did we play? Maybe half an hour?
Maybe with the deploying.
The deployment.
No, it was crazy fast. It felt like a quarter, like 15 minutes playing. Mm-hmm. It was so fast.
Yeah. And that was me using a new army also. So.
Oh, you were playing your
Union.
Your Union?
The Union, yeah. Against my Brewers. No, it was not a standard game. They didn't get really the feel of the game. It was over in the blink of an eye. It's like, okay, so it's over? It's over. Okay. Yeah.
And after that, we played a 100-point game of Relic Blade. So I already tried it at half size. So this time we played full size. And Yom was his first time. We put a lot of terrain on the table. It was fun going over. One of my pig tried to jump a gap that was far too big for how the world works. But still, you can, once a turn, use one of your action dice to add a second dice to your roll or add an extra die to your roll. And with that, I was able to make the jump. So the pig flew from one tower to the other to jump right next to the relic. But I didn't have enough action points to pick up the relic. So next turn, the bear comes in, transform, do a smaller jump, and bang, maul my guy.
Yeah. That's the same druid, thing. Right? The druid, morph into a bear and jump a bridge or two. So, and then just eat the guy. But I don't know. Going into the game, I didn't know that the pigs could pick up the relic. So I was like, oh, he's going for the relic. Oh, problem.
Danger.
Yeah.
Isn't there really a danger zone? Let's go. And heroes, it's really misguiding because heroes, they can fall fast.
Everything can fall fast.
Gee. I mean, you have three heroes. There's like six pigs. You're like, okay, maybe my guys are tougher, but it took down two of my guys like in one shot. Each time. One good attack. Paf, heroes down. Okay. Yep, it goes really fast.
Yeah, that's why you have more equipment to maybe buy health potions and stuff like that. You have points for that.
Mm-hmm.
For the pigs, I had 8 points of equipment I could take, contrary to your like 25 or something like that.
Yeah, but all you take a potion when you get take out of the game in one hit.
Yeah, you need a friend to give it to you or healing spells or stuff like that. But the game was fast, and it was fun. It's really cinematic, so I really liked it. How did you find the rules with the symbol on the cards? And it's pretty easy to learn.
Really easy to learn. You get the hang of it really fast. I thought the flow was good. The flow of the action was good. It was not really bugging that like it's alternate activation. When I'm done, you have more models than me, obviously, to activate, but it was not a problem. I don't know. Nothing was cumbersome or heavy or out of place. I think that the rules were are simple and fine as they are. You said it's a the usual game, 100
Yeah,
points.
that's the full regular size.
Okay. That's good. That's cool then. It's fast game, cool game, cute system. Yep, nothing bad to report there.
That's it for my game. The only other thing I did was not working on my own stuff, but I've volunteered with Metal King Studio, the guy who's doing Relic Blade, to translate the rules for the French version. So I've been working a lot on that this week in my commute and stuff and other free time at work. Well, during lunch and stuff like that, if my boss is listening, not during my work hours. And
Good save. Good save.
another French Canadian is working with that on that with me, and it's going pretty well. We've done at least half of the card, the quick start rules, and all the generic terms, so we're ready to jump into the core of the translation now. So it's cool. It should be done by before the end of the Kickstarter, I hope.
Nice.
So.
You sliding any joual in there? Just to
No, really
no.
clean, really. We try to make it international. The worst thing is, like, I hope to be able to play it with my kids, maybe. And same thing for him. But in both cases, we mostly play our game in English. So we're mostly doing it for other people to use it and not us.
You didn't even slide a Tsigidoo in there? I mean.
Nope.
Oh.
Really clean.
You
Oh, we
just
might add
ask
it in some of the fluff, maybe, but for the rules, no.
the other person that's working on it is it Papagio?
No, it's I'm missing his last name. It's a guy in Yukon.
Okay,
Yeah,
you find
another
Francophone
a
in
Montrealer
Yukon.
who went there to teach French. So he's been there for years, 7 or 8 years, something like that. So.
Wow, okay, cool.
Yeah. Makes it a bit harder for we had a new audio meeting last night to finish the basic term together, but with a 3 hour difference and both with kids means that our meeting was at 11 last night.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So
All
but
right.
it went well. And that's it for my side of the things. Yom?
Okay. Hobby. Well, it was a week since last time. Basically, I said last time I was starting Bloodbringer. So yeah, I've been painting a Bloodbringer. That's the first number one, the first Bloodbringer, because I have two to do. So this one is the red one in the Archangel and Zerial paint scheme that I used. So I'm just like going through the rough part right now. I don't know if you remember, but I went for a specific scheme in the on Zerial in the last in the Archangel, painting muscle sinews. It was like, how can I say, faux fini,
Yeah, okay.
faking like muscle sinews because the Archangel had a nice the wooden the model is done. You could see like all those cool muscles. So I tried to put an accent on them, so now it's the official scheme. But the Blightbringer doesn't have that much, so it's basically freehanding the whole thing. So I'm just plowing through that right now. Pretty much, it's gonna look cool. I'm sure, but
It's a lot of work, huh?
it's a lot of work. I've seen couples of Blightbringers on the web so far. Nothing has really like tickled my fancy. I don't think that people are pushing them enough. Maybe this one I'm pushing it too much, but I've yet to see like a really impressive Bloodbringer. Anyway, personal opinion here, sorry. Otherwise than that, yeah, well, games. I had two games. Tony already talked about them, so yeah. So officially, I guess I'm joining the Guild Ball, the Slow Grow, Now that you have a game in. Other games will be with full team, but the just with the starter, not even no mascots on the field. So yeah, that was really like finished fast anyway.
If we were able to get more people on a night, we could easily get four games.
Oh yeah. Once the pitch are set on the tables, it's games are so fast you can just jump from one table to the other. Yep, and so my starter is well Tapper obviously with Hooper and Friday. So they fill their usual roles like Tapper took out a guy, took out the captain. Friday scored a goal and Hooper was useless. Usual thing. He's always useless. So yeah. Then that's it. That's it for me.
Does he at least draw fire? Like
He gave your captain the extra dice to be able to kill that
exactly. He doesn't do anything by himself. He's supposed to like his job is supposed to go in and finish stuff that Tapper couldn't finish. That's supposed to be the plan with Hooper. Depending with what influence you can put on him. But what you usually do is go somewhere and support someone else who's gonna attack. So in our game, you thanks to Tapper, who gave him extra range on his charge, he was able to charge the how do you say his name? Black
Blackbeard,
whatever.
something like that.
Blackbeard. Yeah, Blackbeard, the opposite captain, and knock him down. So next turn when I activate Tapper, well, Blackbeard is already knocked down thanks to Hooper, and Hooper is supporting my attack. So that's how Tapper took him out. So he's always somewhere doing something that is not supposed to, like not is at full efficiency. He's supposed to be able to take out people. That's how people successfully play him, but I can't apparently. He's always doing one little thing. Yeah, helping people.
Nice.
That's what drunk people do, I guess. Oh, I love you, man. I'm gonna help you.
He's one of those types of drunks. I see. I see. So is that it? Does that wrap it up?
Yep, that's it for me.
Awesome. Okay. Well, for once, I had the most productive week. I feel very good about myself.
Yay, Paul. Yay.
Hey, me. Hey. High five myself. Yeah. You know what? Usually we take a break right now. I think we're just going to do the hobby tip of the episode because it's going to be short. And then we'll take a break and we'll come back with our main topic. Could that work for you guys?
Yep.
Yes.
Perfect. Okay. So this week, the hobby tip of the episode comes from me. And it's about airbrushing. So one of the big pain points by airbrushing is cleaning the airbrush. And you go into any store that sells airbrushes and airbrush paints, they will be more than happy to sell you airbrush cleaner for your airbrush. And I have to tell you, that is a crock. I mean, the stuff works and it works fine, but it's expensive and there's much cheaper ways to clean your airbrush. First off, generally speaking, when you're working with it, a good rinse with water should be all you need. Unless you've got paints, stuck in the cup or you've been working all day with it and you've got a really get a deep clean going on, water should be able to do 90% of the work for you. After that, you'll see stuff people talk about thinning with Windex and cleaning in Windex and all that. Don't put Windex through your airbrush, folks. That's just a bad plan. Anything with ammonia in it is bad because airbrushes are made of brass. Ammonia reacts with brass. If you want to split nozzles and cause all kinds of problems with your airbrush, ammonia is the way to do it.
And it reacts with your lungs too.
Well, what I'm about to recommend also reacts with your lungs. So
Yeah,
wear a
but
mask and be smart about it.
as
Let's face
much.
it. Well, let's face it, you're atomizing stuff, right? So you should always be wearing a mask. You should always be practicing, basic safety. Because anything atomized that you can inhale is not good for you. Unless it's air. So yeah, what I'm going to recommend is rubbing alcohol. Now, rubbing alcohol you can get in a big bottle at the dollar store, at the pharmacy. You'll spend like $1.50, $2 Canadian for a big bottle of stuff. Don't buy pure like isopropyl alcohol because you don't really need it for cleaning. It has its own uses. Some paints you can thin with it, but you just want rubbing alcohol for this 70% stuff. Dirt cheap, and a package of Q-tips. So you do your clean with water. You dump out the majority of the paint. You rinse with water. Get a little squirt bottle of some kind. You know, dollar store, craft stores will have them. You know, squirt some water into the paint cup. Rinse it out as much as you can. Run it through the brush. Rinse it out. Then fill with some rubbing alcohol. Spray that through. And then you can take a Q-tip, you put some rubbing alcohol on, and you can actually clean the inside of the cup. Rinse it out. Again, spray through. Then spray some water afterwards. And just loosen your needle chuck, back your needle out a little bit, so that when it dries, it doesn't stick to the front, so it doesn't stick to the nozzle. And then you're good to go. You don't need to spend a fortune on brush cleaners or specialized solutions. Rubbing alcohol works great. I use it all the time. And even caked on stuff, a little bit of rubbing alcohol and you rub it with a Q-tip, even stuff that's been on the airbrush for weeks will come out. So, just be smart.
Yeah. You know, and that's it. You know, like you taught me how to use the airbrush. And I stuck to that plan. That rubbing alcohol, that's still what I use. It works fine. It works great. I've been using that airbrush for 2 years, maybe. Use rubbing alcohol. And never use a sonic cleaner or anything. And it works super fine.
Yeah. Yep. I use a sonic cleaner because I'm bad. I'm a great teacher and a lousy example. That's the problem.
Okay.
I don't leave paint in the bottom of the cup, but I leave paint on the sides of the cup. I don't clean the brushes. So eventually I have to use something to get... I mean, I could sit there and rub it with a Q-tip for a while, but the sonic cleaner is just easy. I drop them in, I turn it on, I walk away, I come back 8 minutes later, and then the stuff's all, you know, half coming off on its own.
So, makes okay, well, the exterior of the airbrush is maybe not as clean as the interior in my case.
Yeah, exactly. me, it's just the exterior. Yeah. You know, and cleaning up the needles, alcohol does a great job on keeping the needles clean. Because even if you wipe them down, eventually you'll get a little bit of residue where the needles... There's like a Teflon guide inside, just behind the trigger and stuff, or just in front of the trigger on most airbrushes. And I find you get like a little ring of paint there.
Yes.
So a little rubbing alcohol on the needle to keep that needle nice and smooth. And you can also lube the needle and stuff as well, but that's... I don't find that all that necessary. Yeah, so that's my hobby tip. And I guess with that, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about our main topic. So we'll be right back, geeks. And we're back. All right, folks. It's time for us to talk about our main topic, and that's how to grow as a painter. Now, this is a tough one because everyone reacts differently to different things. Everyone learns differently. Certainly, you know, everyone learns at a different speed as well. So these are just a bunch of different points, things that we thought might be helpful for people and what worked for us. You know, and like Antoine and I were talking about before the show, you know, a lot of things on this list, he never does, but he knows that other people might find them useful, right? And then again, this is not everything. Don't take this as a step-by-step guide on how we got to where we are, because it's not what it is. It's just a resource like anything else. So first on our list of things is following painters on social media. I mean, there's a bunch of people out there, guys. You know, and a few years ago, this wasn't an option. We didn't have this. We had to either try to find blogs or websites or maybe hang out in a forum. Like, I used to hang out in Bolter and Chainsword and follow a couple artists there in their Works in Progress forums. You know, nowadays, though, with Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, you've got, you know, 24-hour access to all these great painters.
Yep. And a lot of them also post whips, so it gives you pointers.
Yeah, or small tutorials sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes like just a series of pictures. But it's like a gradation. It's like you see the history. You see the whip happening. So. you can take pointers from that. This is, should be maybe the first step if I want to do that technique, or you can take pointers like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of artists out there like Jim Wappel. He'll post not necessarily full tutorials, but you know, a few different steps of things he's done, and with some notes, right? So he's not going to walk you through everything he did on in his blog post, but at least gives you an idea of kind of what he did and in the direction he headed.
Yep. Yes, and, if that can give you idea, sometimes it's enough.
Yeah, and then there's a ton, not just painters, but there's a ton of painting groups. Now, this is actually, we mentioned this later on in the doc, but I think it's a good time to put it up here now. Aside from following individual artists, you can follow painting groups on Facebook. Like, there's the War Machine and Hordes painting that posts stuff regularly of all skill levels. I mean, I know you follow a ton of them. What are some of the ones you find like useful content?
Wow. I follow mostly painters, but painters they also post in those groups. So you have War Machine / Hordes painting group is one. Miniature Decad Animus is one. Carry On yep. Painting is one. Tabletop Skirmishers. What
heavier
else?
Heavier metal.
Yep. Yeah. Heavier Metal is pretty good. You see a lot of good painters there. There's now Chibi Gamers directed mostly at Chibis.
Yep.
The name says it. That's true. What's the one? Fansite for Games Workshop also. And the name of the group is Fansite for Games Workshop. So most of the big painters, they will post anyway in those groups. So join those groups, and at some point you will see those guys posting that you like what they do, so you'll start following their page. So now it will always appear on your feed. And hey, also, just a quick tip: if you change your, if you put a lot of likes on those pictures, on the or pictures appearing in those groups or those artist page, it will change your Facebook algorithm. So you will see them more and more on your feed. So you don't have to look for them all the time.
That's true. But mind you, if you're following them, you'll get posts when... you'll get notifications from Facebook when people post in those forums anyway, won't you?
If you're following
the artist. Yeah.
Depending on your notification level and everything.
So, yeah. It's true. Not always... not everyone. It's
also because I forget that I'm friends with these artists, so it's... I'm in the group and I'm friends with them, so it's telling me they posted stuff.
Yeah.
That's the other difference, yeah. True. Kind of along the same notes is following or subscribing to channels on YouTube for painters. Now, there's a lot of people out there that do tutorials on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. There's you can
get some great stuff. I mean, I used to watch and I think everyone who's ever looked up any 40K painting will stumble across this person. I think her name is Mini Painter Girl or Girl Painter or something. And she's kind of funny because she's very obviously transgendered. So she kind of talks like Mrs. Doubtfire, but with a German accent.
I saw a couple of her videos. But is that a guy who tries to pass as a girl, or is it a transgender?
Yeah, no, she's a woman now. But the her content is good, especially for starting painters, because she approaches a lot of very, very simple, problems people encounter, like painting reds and you know. And she approaches it in a very basic, easy to follow way. So there's a lot of good content there. And she's just an example of you know, one of the tons of people you'll find on YouTube. Les Bursley, you know, awesome paint job. He does some amazing videos on YouTube that I really enjoy watching. Who else is there, Antoine? I know there's a few different guys.
Those I like a lot are Painting Buddha. They do also like great videos. Like they will do like they will start on a model and do a series of videos. Like each video will focus on a different technique used on that model. So even if at the end the model is like a display level, still it gives you lots of ideas. Wargamers Consortium also do videos. There's our friend Mike from Epic Duck Studios also. Massive Voodoo has a lot of videos.
Yeah, the Massive Voodoo guys are crazy.
Yeah.
So is, I mean, most of the Painting Buddha stuff, I think, is Ben Comets, isn't it?
They're different painters, but I'm following mostly Ben Comets, yes.
Yeah,
he's
also kind of nuts.
He's on his own now, he's freelance.
Yeah.
But still, you can see all these videos from Painting Buddha, but they have a good production value, those videos.
Absolutely.
You always see, like, in a vignette, like a little window, his palette, always, all the time.
Oh, nice.
So you see the model and you see palette, see his mix and everything.
Nice. And I know I've watched a lot of the WGC stuff over the years. Chung Chow's got some very good kind of intro to airbrushing type videos. Les is part of that group as well. I don't know if anyone else in that group has videos. I guess Ichiban had a bunch of videos. I don't know if he's still part of that community or not. But there's a lot of resources out there.
Yeah, so and it's easy to find on YouTube. I mean, just miniature painting as a search. see a lot of them.
You'll find a ton of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the other thing is kind of linked to this, but it's not in YouTube. It's the buying DVDs and tutorial videos from artists or painting companies. So CMON has produced a bunch. Secret Weapon has some, Reaper has some. Then of course you got Jessica Rich, and Jessica Rich has her own series of videos. I think the Jen Haley and Marique ones are distributed by CMON. You've got the Painting Pyramid stuff with Jim Wapple as well.
Yeah, there's I think it's a downloadable, but either that you buy the real DVDs or that you download the content. It's mostly the same videos when you said Jessica and Marika. You'll find them on CMON and Reaper. On Secret Weapon Miniature, you will find Jessica, but it's new, I think, that is offering those DVDs, generally through CMON, but basically you can find like those big names, established artists, like award winner, blah, blah, blah. They've made sets of DVDs, so or Jim is just producing so much content that you can buy each videos or a set of videos.
Yeah.
Downloadable. So yeah, just look for them, those big names. Established artists will have DVDs to their time.
Yeah, and also there's Brendan Palmer also has a set of videos through CMON as well.
Yo.
Where he talks about building terrain and stuff. So some cool stuff there.
Oh, to tackle a whole army in a week?
Yeah, exactly.
Screw you, Brendan!
I think it's called One Week Army, that video, yeah. Jim actually is very different to Jim Wapple. His videos are all individual topics. I think each video is 100 minutes. And what's cool about him is when you want to make a bundle, he's got 50 different videos, I think. And you can pick and choose. So he'll have a bundle like, and don't quote me for pricing, this is an example, like 5 videos for $85. So you're getting 500 minutes of tutorial, and you pick the 5 topics you find interesting. So he's got one on his core technique, which he calls shaded base coat. He's got one on glazing. He's got non-metallic metal gold, non-metallic metal copper, silvers, painting reds, painting greens, painting blues, painting yellow.
Multiple hair, basing.
Basing, animals, painting different types of horses and stuff. There's a lot of content there, so you can really customize your downloads, and actually I own some of his videos. I've spent the money and I bought some of his videos, and I find them really really well put together. And I go back and I rewatch them, because I'm like, oh, this type of model, or the scheme I'm going for, Jim's style would really work well for it. I'm gonna go back and I rewatch the video, just kind of refresh myself on some of his techniques. He's got an interesting way of painting, so. I'll have to say, yeah, all these tutorial videos are excellent. And then we go analog, right? Read a book.
Read a book!
So, Antoine, you actually were the one that suggested this, because I think you said this was one of the ways that really influenced you.
Yeah, Le Grand Livre de la Figurine by a bunch of French guy or European guys, which would translate to the big book of miniature. It's mostly explains the, that book is old, like 15 years old, I think 10 to 15. And it explained how the Europe way was to paint back then, like all the layering with tiny, tiny coats and doing 100 layers to do a shade that originated mostly there. And it explains a bit how you push your paint or you, you draw your pigments. And my biggest advance in painting was by reading that book and trying examples and trying the different technique on my models. Because I don't really watch videos or stuff like that. I barely visit other conventions. So my best source was that book, and it still is. And other books were made like that book as a version 2 now. And one of the guy working on it, Jeremy Bonamantebul, did a newer series called Figopedia that's available in French and English. So easier for probably the main part of our listenership. And there are other books too, like Yom, you got the Angel Giraldez book, I think.
Yeah, the Angel Giraldez masterclass book, which is maybe not as advanced as the Grand Livre de la Figurine or Figopedia, but it gives you like Angel's technique on how he does all the infinity paint jobs. And it's called a masterclass book. Of course, you can. It brings you from A to Z to the level of Angels, but I find it kind of easy. Like, don't be intimidated by those books. I find it kind of easy to see what steps it takes to get to the models. And now if you follow, since again, the social media painting groups, the Infinity group, there's a lot of people now posting minis that they have painted that look a lot like what Angel does. So clearly some people took good pointers from that book.
Yeah, I took a look through it and I found it pretty interesting. Now, I know other people have looked at it and they were not very happy with that particular book, but I think it's going to depend on the person, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
I mean,
everything.
You take what you want. It's to each his own. I mean, some people will really learn from it. Some people will think it's a letdown. Maybe it's not world changing, but if it can make you paint like Angel, I think it's a win.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? There's no magic formula, right?
Nope.
And
yeah,
you can take dozens of classes. And walk out with, you know, as little or as much as you want. You know, really, it's all about you.
Yeah, all of those things we said, even with the book, people will react differently to it. Like you said, some people will walk away from a class or a tutorial and say, oh, wow, I've learned something. Other people will say, well, okay, I knew that, or it's not my style, or whatever. Or it's not clicking, or... Like you said yourself previously, Paul, in another episode maybe, you said that it's the results that count.
Absolutely.
Not the process. So, even like people ask me to give classes, but if they knew how I paint, it would make no sense to them.
Yeah,
I'm taking different avenue, different ways, but the ending is pretty much what you see nowadays on the web, but the way I used to get there, it's not typical, so...
It's not orthodox, yeah.
Yeah.
Not what people would expect. And you know what, like... You know, I took the Meg Maples class last year, right? And I did not get two-brush blending. I can't do it. I don't know what I'm missing, like what the hang-up is, but I just can't do it. And that's the cornerstone technique of her class. But I still walked away with insights into other things. You know, so even if you don't get what you expected out of a resource, you'll still likely walk away with something.
Yeah.
You
take pointers, and maybe it will affect you or not. That's for you to decide, or what you are more comfortable with. Also, And after that, I think it brings us to the next point. It's practice. I mean, you just take pointers from different ways of doing things and then you practice the hell out of it to see what
Yeah.
works for you.
Your first blend is not going to be perfectly smooth, right?
Oh no, for sure.
Nope. Takes
You
you
are going to work on
five, yeah.
that technique for a long, long time. And you know, I always love these people I see post online where it's like, "This is my first miniature," and they come up with this thing that's, you know, perfect non-metallic metal, you know, super smooth blends. And you're like, "Okay, that's obviously not your first miniature." Or you're some sort of world-renowned artist that we don't know about in like another field, like Jim Wappel, where it's like, oh, you know, I was a watercolor artist for, you know, 15 or 20 years, and I just decided to take all those techniques and apply them to miniatures, and I was instantly good. You know, okay, well, you know, you have a background in art and painting; it makes sense, it translates, right? But you know, for 99.9% of the population, you don't get there right away. It's
No,
all about practice.
exactly.
You know, and you know, as you practice, techniques get refined, techniques evolve and change. Now, while I still paint, there's a lot of similarities in how I paint now and how I painted 10 years ago. There's a lot of subtle differences too. And just the application level, you know, my paints are smoother, my lines are cleaner. And that's all from practice. You can't get that by watching a video or reading a book. It's all from applied technique.
Exactly. Your technique will get better, you will find shortcuts also, so there's no other way around it. Yeah, and you will also find like what kind of paint brands you like, what kind of paintbrushes you like.
Yeah, because paints all behave differently.
So a brush that will work for me won't work for you because we just don't have the same end and the same touch.
Yeah. And it's like the brush that works for Jim Wapple won't work for anyone but Jim Wapple.
Yeah.
I've You know what? You know what we do? At Adepticon, I'm going to sit down with him. I'm going to record him painting something super small with that giant number 8 round craft brush that he buys in a pack of 10 for $4. Because you have to see it to believe it.
It's
Anyway,
funny
I
that
digress.
nobody gets Jim.
Yeah, other
Even
artists
like
watch him.
Jessica is like, eh, I don't know what he does. How he does
Yeah,
it.
Rhonda Bender, I remember Rhonda paints for Reaper and she does some beautiful stuff. And her jam is blending, right? That's what she loves. And so she got some of Jim's videos and started watching them. And she has no idea what like, she can't follow it. She doesn't understand. It does not, she's like, it does not compute. You know, I'm watching it, I'm seeing it, it still doesn't make sense. It's funny. We have all that to say, so practice, right? And how do you get practice? You get practice by painting. Another thing that when you practice, ask your peers for their opinions. Get some reviews, get some pointers, you know, have people ask questions and talk to you about what you did. Because they may reveal something. The questions they ask or the pointers they give may reveal something that helps you go to that next level of painting.
Yeah. Like for example, Tonio. When I ask peer reviews or peer opinions, sometimes Tonio, maybe because he read Le Grand Livre de la Figurine, but he comes up with something that I cannot do. So I will ask him, how do you do that? So yeah, just check with your friends, like share what you do and encourage them to share what they do with you also. And sometimes you will trade techniques.
Yeah, you know, and painting with friends is an important thing. I'm going to jump to that right now. So we actually had for quite a while, we had a weekly painting group where we'd get together. We'd all go to the local gaming store, and we used to have between 5 and 10 people, sometimes like 13, 14 people show up to paint with us. And we're all there painting, sharing ideas, sharing techniques. And you know, well, I have to say that I'm sure Yom and Antoine didn't get as much from it as I did or some of the other people, them being kind of like the higher caliber painters in our group. It was still very useful for me, and I think it was very helpful for a lot of people who you know don't necessarily paint as well as we do. You know, just having someone who's a friend they can talk to because it's intimidating, you know, asking random artists online or posting something up on Facebook and asking people for advice, you know, because you don't know. The internet is a very scary and brutal place sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so also the technology side. Some people don't have smartphones available to take pictures, or they don't have a good lightning set. So even if they take pictures out and they share them online, the word might not be clear and they won't get the answer they need.
No, while that's absolutely true.
In a painting group, people will see your model in their hand and they'll be able to judge by the exact effect and by what was really done.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, even if you don't have a local painting group at your store, it's easy to form one.
Yes.
It is amazing how many people are looking for something like this. And if you, you know, mention that, hey, you know, I want to start something, you know, you build it, they will come. It's as simple as that. You'll be surprised how many people show up and want to take part in something like this.
Just turn the baseball guy away.
Yeah, exactly. Just send the baseball players back into the cornfield.
Maybe we'll get old painters ghosts coming out of the cornfield. Can we paint with you guys?
Yes.
Creepy but cool. Okay. But you know, sometimes it's not always possible to get together in person, which is one of the things we found out. You know, I had a kid, and you know, Antoine moved, worked got hectic. Yom has so many commissions. He can't really bring commissions to the store to work on because, you know, transporting is not practical.
No, that would be no.
Yeah. So no. he would show up with like models to clean and prep, like stuff that didn't require good lighting or, you know, someone kicked the table, it wouldn't matter.
Yep.
So what we decided to start doing is we started doing Google Hangouts. Now, Google Hangouts has a limitation that, of course, you're not there in person. It's hard to show the models to each other. You can take pictures and share them. But you may run into the same problems Antoine already mentioned about not having a good camera or a setup, you know, lighting setup to do it. But at least it's still an alternative.
And right? Motivating to, even if you're not showing it, just being painting with other people who are doing it lets you paint longer most of the time.
Yeah. Make painting a social event. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, you stay on the table longer. Also, I mean, we're doing hangouts and then someone has a question like will you do that, so people start sharing opinions right live on the spot, and some people will just go like you're already on the computer obviously, so they will go online, try to find a reference and give the link to the person. So it's all really fast, so it's entertaining, but it's also a quick way to just have opinions on your stuff.
Now this next one is a little bit more difficult because it involves going to a convention, right? So,
but before you jump in,
You
don't need to go to a convention for that. Some people do it at their local stores. Go on, but you don't have to go to a convention.
This is true. I'm just saying convention because the doc says con.
Yeah.
But you're right. So attending a painting class. So, like to Antoine's point, Antoine gives a class locally at a community center for beginning to intermediate painters. You know, you can go to take a class at a convention. Like, so when I go to Adepticon, I've booked 3 or 4 classes with different artists to learn different techniques.
Some people, you know, do a class in store too. Like absolutely. A bit like we did our painting group, but with somebody like managing the session. Yeah. And guiding people towards
more structured. Specific
points. Yeah, more structured than what our informal version was.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's true. And I find these, you know, the classes I've taken at stores and at cons to be a great resource. You know, not every class is for me. But like I said, I always walk out of there with something. You know, and I look forward to doing it. It's my favorite part of Adepticon.
Yeah.
Is going to the painting classes.
My point was a bit too that for people attending cons already, like you go to Adepticon, you go to Gen Con, whatever, don't overlook painting classes. That was kind of my point. People will focus on tournaments or what deal they can find, what game to try, but don't bypass those painting classes. You can have several great artists, like big names in the industry, just teaching you for 2 hours, 3 hours. Doesn't matter. You can line them up in a day and come back with a lot of tools. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're pretty reasonably priced. I mean, a day of classes will cost you probably about $100 for three classes, for like 9 hours worth of class. That's really not bad.
No.
I know it sounds like a lot, but it's really not that bad. And I've taken classes with Jessica Rich and Rhonda Bender, and I'm taking some with Aaron Lovejoy and Justin McCoy from Secret Weapon and Ben Comets. I know I'm going to walk out of there with something.
Oh, if you don't, there's something wrong.
Exactly. And it's unfortunate, but some cons have better classes than others. Adepticon, I find, has really good classes. The ones at LVO, I think, were pretty good. ReaperCon had amazing classes. All kinds of different stuff. And just the big painting room at ReaperCon, where you could sit there and talk to any one of the artists that are at the con, is fantastic for developing techniques. You got a bunch of models out in front of Jen Haley, and you want to know, how did you paint that sword? You can sit down and ask her, and she'll spend 5, 10 minutes talking to you about the color she used and what her thoughts were when she was painting it. And it's really enlightening. Gen Con, I found, was kind of disappointing for classes. Not so much for the content. Well, yeah, I guess it is because of content. The big problem is most of the classes at Gen Con are theory classes. They're not practical. So it's hard to sit there for an hour or two and get talked out about painting without trying stuff yourself. And then you're not really going to get to try that technique for 3 or 4 days till you get back from the con. So half of what you don't retain the same way.
Yeah.
So I found that was tough. Yeah, they give you handouts and everything, but I found it was tough.
Yeah, practical classes like we did at Adepticon is perfect. They're showing you the technique and you try it, and if you're doing it wrong, they're gonna tell you.
Yeah, some and some artists are brutal about it, but it's for your own good.
I like Jessica.
I wasn't mentioning any names. But yes, I meant Jessica. That's okay. We love her anyway. She's only brutally honest because she thinks we can take it, right? If she didn't know us as well as she does, she wouldn't be like that. It's the double-edged sword of friendship.
You're tough. I can beat you up. You're
Yeah,
tough.
exactly. See, it's all good. We survived. Yeah, and if you can, this sounds like we're tooting our own horn here, but like the master classes we've organized, I think those have been great. Maybe not cheap, but I think worth every penny. I don't regret anything I spent on those classes. Maybe you guys feel a bit differently because you're a higher level. So you don't gain as much out of the class as I did, but I found them to be excellent resources to learn from.
Well, Liz was a bit similar to me, so yeah, of course I walk away with less tools, less new tools. But the one with Meg taught me a lot. And yes, it seemed costly, but it's an investment, people. I mean, it's gonna change the way you paint.
And it's not costing you more than if you had done 2 full day of painting class at a convention anyway.
No.
Oh, no, for sure. I mean, $100 for 8 hours of instruction, where you've got a small class. We had 10 people, so you're getting a lot of one-on-one time. I think it was a good value, definitely.
Yeah, and we're saying the class we did, but other people like Mathieu Fontaine is doing classes almost everywhere except the States, and you can always find is and he has 2 different levels also, so different topics depending on which one.
Yeah.
He's doing one in Calgary, I think, in the coming weeks. He's doing some in the in Europe sometimes too. So
Yeah,
there's a
he's a
bunch of
brilliant painter
painters,
as well.
yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. Those master classes are a real gem.
And if you can't find one, organize one.
Yeah.
That's what you did, Paul.
Yeah, and it's not that hard, right? These artists, this is their living. So they're more than happy to go to you. If you have the people to attend the class, they're more than happy to figure out a way to get to you to teach it. You know, they're looking for work like anyone else. So it hasn't been hard. You know, I talked to Meg. I messaged her. I was at Gen Con, actually. And I just messaged her, and I started talking to her about it. And I said, okay, if I help organize one in Montreal, would you come? And she's like, yeah, I haven't been to Montreal for a number of years. I would love to go. And lo and behold, we had a great class with a crazy turnout because it was their last class in North America. And it was so good, in fact, that she planned, like, the day she was leaving, we talked about doing one in 2017. So, you know, we're planning a rematch, but it's not really the term I'm looking for. But, yeah, a second edition of the class at some point. And it was like that with Liz. I met Liz through a mutual friend, Julian Walker, and got to know her a little bit at Adepticon and talked to her. I said, well, you know, would you like to teach a class? Just because I thought her personality would lend itself to teaching. And her curriculum that she wanted to teach seemed interesting for beginners and intermediate painters and even for some advanced people. So I said, you know, let's get this worked out. And it wasn't a huge class, but you know, we had 10 people per day. She was happy with the numbers. We were all happy as students. I think it worked out really well.
Yeah, it was a nice setup for the class, and she could afford spending more time with each person. Yeah. So yeah, it was a good format. It was a good class.
And even now I'm working on the next master class, because the first two were so well received. I'm actually working. Should I say?
Sure.
Okay.
The hype,
the suspense. So I'm actually working with James Wapple to get him up here. Hopefully later this year, in the, you know, September, October timeframe, to teach for a couple days. And I think that'll be something to see.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not missing that one for sure.
Yeah. James, or as I like to call him, Crazy Uncle Jim. Because that's how he refers to himself. For my daughter, he calls himself Crazy Uncle Jim, because when she was a baby, I used to watch, I'd sit up watching his painting videos at night when the baby was keeping me up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and to get to the point where the baby would sleep whenever James would start talking. So there were several nights where James Wapple and Garage Hammer were the two things that put baby to sleep. So I got a lot of James Wapple and Garage Hammer in for a few months. Yeah, so getting him up here, I think, will be great. And I know Antoine's kind of a soft spot for Jim.
He was fun. I've met him at Gen Con. And I talked with him a lot while he was at the Zodus boot, painting right in front of people and just answering questions. And it was a lot of fun.
And, you know, he loves teaching that way. He likes the structured classes, but he really likes, like, he'll go to a con and he'll have his couple classes he's teaching. Excuse me. But he'll just have, in his spare time, he'll sit in a common area and pull out paints and just start painting. And he'll gather a crowd. People just sit around and chat with him. And he'll talk about what he's doing and why he's doing it. And he will scrap the model he's working. This is what kills me. He will scrap the model he's working on, like blob some paint on it, you know, destroy it basically, and then redo it to show you how he did it. Right? Or he'll go, well, you know, I did it this way, but you could do it this way too. And he'll just swap the colors on the palette and just start, you know, throwing color on the model. And what's amazing is that he's so fluid about it. You know, I could never be like that. I don't have an artist's brain, but it just comes so naturally to him. But he also gets it. Other people don't see it that way. So he's got a very good teaching technique. Like a good bedside manner, I guess you could say. So I think that'll go well here. So I'll have more info for that as we go on into the summer. But it's being worked on. All right. I think we've pretty much gone through the list. Was there anything else or anything I missed?
Probably, but I can't think of anything right now.
All right. Well, maybe listeners, if you've done something or you found something that helped you that we didn't mention here, you could post a comment on our Facebook, and we'd love to hear from you. Because it's always cool to hear, you know, what works for other people, you know. Because there's like I said, there's no right or wrong way to learn. And everyone's got different ways of doing it, so it'd be curious. I'm just curious to see what's worked for other people.
Well, it also confirms that not all the listeners are bots.
That would be nice to know too. Yes. Well, no, Mike writes us questions, so we know Mike is a real person. Or is he?
Or is he?
No, I've met him, so I know he's a real person. And the guys from Gamers Vault are real people, and they listen to the show too. So I think that's at least 5 people. So we know we have at least 5 real listeners. 8 if we count ourselves.
Crazy.
Well,
man.
We know that Yom doesn't listen to the show, so
that's true. Well, he doesn't listen to the ones he's on, so we'll just have to stop having him on so he listens to more shows. It'll boost our numbers.
Yeah, boost numbers by not having me on. I mean, it makes sense.
Actually, you know, Antoine was saying last episode the numbers were kind of low, so maybe there's a correlation with Yom and low numbers.
Yeah. Not because I'm actually listening, but because maybe people don't want me on the show. Because
you drive people away.
Yeah, you know, my suave French accent.
Well, no, Antoine's accent is suave. Yours is just kind of, you know, yom.
Whatever that means.
All right, guys. I think we're rambling now. Shall we call it? Yes. Do we have any shout-outs?
Not this week.
No, not right now. Nope.
Awesome. Okay. Well, you know what? Actually, I'm just going to give a little shout-out to John Chastanet. Because, you know, he wanted listening material for skiing. And skiing season's almost over. And we've got 2 episodes back-to-back for him. So he better take advantage and hit the slopes. That's all I'm saying. On that note, I guess we'll sign off. So see you next time.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Bye, geeks.
Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Read our blog at geeksofthenorth.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth. Or follow us on Twitter at Geeks of the North. You can follow me, Paul, on Twitter at PRFilio. And Antoine at Eltonio Berg. See you in 2 weeks, geeks.
Thank you for checking out a United Geeks Network family member. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other online media with a geek culture slant, head over to UnitedGeeksNetwork.com where you will find Broken Prism Reviews, a YouTube channel bringing you game reviews in 3 parts, unboxing, express gameplay, and a quick rundown of what makes the game stand out. The United Geeks Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at UnitedGeeksNetwork.com.